You have reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your question about a scaly animal that is also a delicious snack after the beep.
Hi, my name is Liana, and I've been wondering where goldfish came from. Not the food, like the pet.
Hello?
Hey, Liana, it's Flora from ELT.
Hi.
Have you had a goldfish?
I have had a goldfish, yeah.
What was its name? What was the story?
My sister and I both got one. They were Goldie and Princess. And then my parents totally left them at the house alone for a week when we were on vacation.
I guess that was the end of their story?
That was the end of their story, yes.
So what are you dying to know?
So, like, every kid has had a goldfish. But how did we even end up with them in our homes in the first place? Like, how did they end up in these bags that were getting from carnivals, and parents are like, oh, okay, cool, here, let's just put it in a jar.
They are like a quintessential American pet.
Yeah.
Do you have any theories about why it's this fish, like why this fish ascended the pet ranks?
Oh, that's really just where I keep getting stuck, is like, I don't know how it was them.
It's a great question, and the answer has more ups and downs than a wave pool.
I've got some amazing stories for you today.
Catherine Greer is our guide on this aquatic adventure. She is known as the pet historian.
Because I wrote a book on the history of pet keeping.
Okay, so how did goldfish get into fishbowls across America? This story begins far from Petco.
Well, goldfish come from Asia, from China originally. They're a carp.
Their ancestors were crucian carp, and they were not a pet, they were a meal.
Oh, ugh, they're so small.
Their forefish weren't. Okay, so I want you to see them. Can you Google crucian carp?
Yeah.
That's the carp that are thought to have been bred into goldfish.
Whoa. Size-wise, I'm coming across some that are like the size of someone's hand, but like some big ones where a guy looks stoked to be holding this big fish. And they are not gold.
I know. Surprise.
In the wild, they're sort of dark green on the top and gold on the bottom.
At least, that's typically what they looked like, but not always. So while people were catching these fish, every once in a while, they noticed something strange.
What they discovered was that periodically it would produce a fish that the scales all over were gold rather than just on the stomach area.
In this sea of brown, they'd occasionally find a golden one.
Whoa, I bet they thought that was really crazy.
And this ability to turn gold was this carp's first step towards fishbowl domination. Gold is an auspicious color. It signifies wealth and good fortune. So people started picking out the gold ones and breeding them together. And the goldfish was born.
When was this all happening?
According to Chinese texts, you have goldfish by 500 AD.
500?
Yeah.
1,500 years.
Yes. The human goldfish relationship is as long as the line at a Pepperidge Farm outlet.
I just really want to know how it got from China 500 AD to having kids come home with a bag of goldfish.
Well, they seem to leave Asia, from what I can figure out, in the 17th century.
As trade between China and Western Europe increased, goldfish went along for the ride.
And then they make it to the United States. The first advertisement that I found for them in the United States is actually from 1804.
They're sold on the East Coast, but not exactly as pets.
They're regarded as parlor ornaments.
Like living sculpture, basically beautiful decorative prisoners.
Is that not what pets are? Or at least fish?
I agree with you. But this was beyond. Like, people didn't understand you needed to feed them.
They treated them almost like a flower arrangement. And in fact, that's probably about how long they lived.
That's dark.
It does get brighter when people start to take an interest in keeping them alive.
The big change seems to be in the 1850s. And part of that has to do with the development of what's called the balanced aquarium.
So an influential book came out about aquariums and, quote, water cabinets, not to be confused with water closets. And the book laid out how you care for fish.
You would put plants and gravel, and they'd sort of figured out that the plants would provide oxygen to keep the fish going.
Did people have other types of fish? Like, was the tropical fish thing happening yet, or was it just goldfish?
Well, people tried other fish, but goldfish had a special advantage. It wasn't that they were extra pretty or extra smart. They were extra hard to kill.
Goldfish are really, really hardy.
And this is the second reason why goldfish became America's favorite fish. They can live at 30 degrees or 100 degrees. They can cope with low oxygen. They survive when other fish do not.
So in the end, the goldfish was the winner in the family aquarium.
The hardiness served them at home, but it also served them on the road.
With the arrival of the railroad, they would basically put them in milk cans, a bunch of them with water in milk cans, and then ship them various places.
Not every fish enjoys long, hot train travel.
But goldfish could tolerate it.
Goldfish had one other big thing going for them. And this is the third reason goldfish swam into so many of our lives.
They were cheap, really cheap.
In 1920, they were selling for $2.50 for 100, a pet for a few pennies.
The early era of the dime store goldfish was a real moment, right? It represented something that working class people could have.
They were cheap enough that kids could have them and have them again, because no fish is hardy enough to withstand children.
Goldfish became the first modern disposable pet. And they also become regarded as a good way to teach children about death because they die a lot.
So these fish make it into classrooms and offices and carnivals. They're sold by the millions.
They were available for everybody.
To sum it up, they became a top pet because they're tough, disposable, and sparkly.
Very all-American fish.
Exactly.
It makes sense. They work.
They do. But that's just the story of the common goldfish. There's a whole alternate reality of goldfish where the fish are delicate, expensive, and not gold at all.
Ooh.
You got grand champion fish over three.
That's after the break. Liana, when you think goldfish, what do you picture?
Small, orangey, goldish. Yeah, just like they're very straightforward.
A simple orange minnow.
Sitting there in a bowl.
So you are thinking of the common goldfish.
C-O-M-M-O-N. It is the most primitive goldfish that you can buy.
Allow me to introduce you to goldfish breeder Dave Mandley. He has been raising goldfish since he was 6 years old.
I was, you know, a goldfish freak from the very beginning.
And here's the thing about the goldfish we all picture.
There's no long fins. There's no head growth. There's no fancy eyes.
That's in contrast to the wider world of goldfish. And that is what we are about to explore. Dave is going to take us on a paddle through the world of fancy goldfish.
There's 20 or 30 true varieties of goldfish. And hundreds of other sub-varieties.
There are goldfish with fancy tails.
Fan tails, veil tails, single veils, twin veils.
There are goldfish with fancy eyes.
Telescope eyes are eyes that protrude, and there's about seven different types of telescopes.
There are celestials, for example.
The eyes go straight up in the air, like the fish is looking to the heavens.
There are goldfish with oversized heads.
Oh, yeah, I've seen goldfish that have those bulbous heads or like that look really different. You're like, what happened to that one? I think I always just assumed that that was something that maybe the person who was like breeding them maybe did wrong.
No, it's very much intentional. These traits are the result of meticulous breeding by goldfish freaks like Dave.
So they're just like different breeds, like dogs, but goldfish.
Yes, goldfish with specific trait combinations are classified as breeds.
You take a fantail and you put head growth and we call it an oranda. Then there is the comet, which has a elongated tail. Then there's the calico form of that comet called a shabunkin.
What's the hot goldfish right now?
The Ranchu goldfish, originated in Japan.
What does it look like?
Well, today, modern Ranchu is a long-bodied fish, slightly elongated, does not have a dorsal fin. There's no fin on the top of its back. Its tail goes down, and the tail part going down is called the peduncle. And the modern-day Ranchu, they've made the heads square.
And you're supposed to admire it from above, Dave says.
From the top, looking down. It's called the top view Ranchu. That is probably the top fish in the goldfish world today.
We are very far from the hardy common goldfish. Some of these fish go for hundreds of dollars. They're very delicate. People spend years cultivating the best specimen, and then they enter them into competitions for best in bowl.
There are goldfish shows.
The Middle Georgia Koi and Goldfish Show, held in the town of Perry recently, is one of the nation's largest.
That's, what do they show?
Well, think of a dog show, but in this case, all the competitors are in tanks.
The ribbon tail, the scalation, everything is just beautiful on this fish.
One missing scale.
There are judges, there are standards. This is what they look for.
The color of the fish, the type scales on that fish, shape of the fins, the length of the fins, and then deportment. You want a fish that can swim around the tank on a level plane.
How well they swim? I mean, it's kind of like a beauty pageant.
And it is so proud. When it stops in the tank, it automatically throws all of its fins out. And it's like it's posing.
Oh, wow.
So it's a wonderful fish.
You really have to understand, people will come to that show and may have been breeding a line of goldfish for 20 or 30 years. And their pride, their reputation, their name is on that fish.
This is making me want to get a goldfish.
Dave suggests starting with a simple, hard-to-kill common goldfish.
You can sit back and enjoy watching them maneuver through the tank. They are just a perfect swimming fish.
I'm like in that mix of like, I want a goldfish, but now I feel more responsible because I know their whole history. I feel like I owe something to them to like treat them better than just the bowl, the classic goldfish bowl.
Before we go, I want to follow up on something. A few episodes ago, we talked about dinosaur roars in the Jurassic movies, which are made from real animal sounds. And we thought there has to be some undiscovered animal talent in the ELT audience. Maybe the next Meryl Streliphant is pooping in your backyard. Perhaps Christopher Barkin is sitting on your lap right now. So we asked ELT listeners to send in their animal audition tapes. And today we have a few honorable mentions and a winner of Best Vocal Pet Talent. So we have a special commendation for Michael, a Rhodesian Ridgeback mix from New Jersey, who makes a convincing bloodthirsty monster. Here's his owner.
He makes that noise when I'm snuggling up against him in bed or if he has a toy and he wants to play with me.
Also want to give a shout out to Pumpkin, a Bichon Frise Shih Tzu, who may have a future as a Foley artist.
She doesn't really bark much, but she makes noises that sound more like an old door that really needs some oil on the hinges, or other times a wooden door that's slowly opening from a soft wind.
Now for the winner of Best Pet Vocals. We have pet owner Diane on the line.
Hi, this is Diane. I have a pug named Doug.
Tell me about his special sound.
I've never heard anything quite like it.
How do other people respond to it?
Most times people are just amazed. A coworker was nearby and asked why that lady was screaming like that. What's happening to that pig?
You sent us a video of Doug doing his thing. Set the scene.
I was taking Doug to the vet, and he loves car rides. And when we got to the parking lot, at the vet's office, he suddenly realized where we were.
Yes, we just realized where we are. Oh, peace. Roll down the window. He's really mad. We're at the vet. Doug just realized that we're at the vet. And he's
It's so outrageous, I need to hear it one more time.
The vet could hear before we even got into the office.
What does the vet say about it?
At this point, he gets kind of VIP treatment. He has a side door that he goes through now when we go to the vet.
What do you mean? He has his own entrance?
Yes. So he doesn't go in the front lobby because he screams at other dogs. So they've started having us call ahead, and he has a back entrance that we go through. Meanwhile, he is screaming the entire time until he gets a pretzel.
Pretzels soothe me too. Does anything else trigger him?
Yes. The mailman or another dog. And he even has this, we created a Spotify playlist called Songs That Bug Doug, because there are some songs that make him really mad.
Like what?
There's a Sia song called Puppies Are Forever, not just for Christmas. Puppies are forever. He gets really fired up about that one.
Does he scream?
He screams, or he just kind of sighs and barks under his breath.
I feel like Doug has figured something out.
Yeah, he knows how to get what he wants.
This is what I mean. Like, I can scream. Why am I not screaming more? If you have a burning question you need answered, give us a scream. 833-RING-ELT. 833-RING-ELT. And if you want to see some of the goldfish we talked about today, head over to our Twitter or Instagram.
Every Little Thing is produced by Kristen Clark, Phoebe Flanagan, Aaron Reese, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Ian Chillug and Caitlin Kenny are our consulting editors. Scored by Dara Hirsch. Mixing by Dara Hirsch. Thanks to Dr. Jing Luo and Dr. Gao Yun and the folks at Hunting Creek Fisheries. Please pass the goldfish. Goodbye.